This is episode 13 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
2% doesn't sound like much. But 2% of the entire planet, of every person on it, that's more than the world's 10 largest cities combined. It's 140 million people. And like that, they were gone.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the show The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk some more about the finale, The Prodigal Son Returns. Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. I'm your host, Mary.
My name is Blake. And I love listener feedback.
I know.
I love, love talking to you guys, hearing you guys, and just like reading your responses and everything. It's phenomenal. I love doing it.
It makes us happy.
Yes, it does. We kind of geek out all about it because like we still... let me say this. I still can't get over the fact that people actually listen to us and actually care about what we have to say. All right, now let's just be honest here. I don't know why you guys listen to us, to be honest, because we're just a couple of jamokes with two microphones and we have podcast equipment. That's what it feels like to me. Like you count on us, I think, a little bit. And they do. I mean, I'm not being a dink about it. It's they kind of like how I cannot tell you how many people have written me emails or us emails or tweets saying they consider us part of the Leftovers experience. Just as much as the show itself.
Wow.
You know, and like I'm not trying to tap myself on the or pat myself on the back here. I'm really not. But people kind of listen to us because they kind of rely on us to help them break the show down, and we provide a forum for everybody to talk, you know, and go crazy with, you know.
Well, because of that, we got so much fantastic listener feedback based upon the finale.
I know.
That we couldn't even fit it in a finale episode.
Let's also be honest. We talked for almost 2 hours.
That was an epic show.
That really was. And guys, you know, some of you really liked it. And if some of you didn't like it, I'm sorry. But, you know, we were just so excited by the episode that we literally did not plan for that to happen. We just sat down and talked. And then all of a sudden, 2 hours later, we were like, holy crap, we cannot have a 3-hour episode here, so we need to split this up a little bit.
So here is your listener feedback episode.
All right, so the first thing we got was a direct message from Twitter, and I'm not going to name the person who said it because I don't want you to get in trouble, and I want somebody to come and after you, but you know who you are, and I love you for everything that you are because of this message. In response to the guy who really pissed me off last episode, remember the guy that we were talking to, Ken Lipson?
Yes.
Yeah, and how I was like really mad at him because he was berating the Lost.
Yeah,
he was
and I thought, Lost. I thought you were being a little too hard on him.
I was being a little too hard on him. Well, apparently we have some listeners that were actually in full agreement with me. And one of our listeners direct messaged me and says, every annoying Lost / Leftovers, like critic or fan, should forever be known as Ken Lipson. So if somebody ever criticizes Lost or The Leftovers unjustly, just be like, oh, we got another Ken Lipson over here. What do you think?
I still have a little soft spot for poor Ken. Sorry, I do.
I don't know. I can't see. Ken is just... Listen,
leave him alone.
All right. I'm just going to say this and then I'm going to move on. Ken, if you're listening, I'm not making fun of you. And I want you to appreciate this. There's something my dad told me a number of years ago. You want to know what it is?
What?
Kid, you can't fix stupid.
On that note.
You can't fix stupid. So I can't help that you are not smart enough to get the show.
Oh my God. You're really mean.
I'm not making fun of them. I'm just saying.
You're being mean.
This is how it goes. That's just life. Listen, I ain't smart enough to understand thermodynamics. Does that make me?
You can't even say the word.
Exactly. I can't even understand that. It's okay. Thermodynamics, not my forte.
You know what your forte is, though?
What's that?
Reading people's emails.
All right, let's get to it. We got an email from Parawatt, and if I'm saying your name wrong, dude, I'm sorry, but I've never seen a name like that, and it's really cool. From Parawatt in Bangkok, Thailand.
I landed. My plane landed there one time.
When you come back from Bali?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool. So we got people listening to us in Thailand. Holy crap. Peep. Wow. He says, I totally agree with you that The Gavis at Their Best is one of the best episodes on TV ever. Your insight is spot on about Kevin's problem that, you know, he didn't, you know, he didn't care about his family and was trying to let it go. He says, the only thing I wish I would ask is please kindly give us time to pause and skip before you spoiled Hank on Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Remember when I said that?
Yes, you totally, you spoil so many things for people.
Listen, I gave a spoiler alert. I played the alarm. I mean, I'm not sure what more else I could do.
People are driving. They don't have time. They don't have 1 second. You need to give them a couple of seconds. You need to warn them ahead of time so that they can say, all right, Blake said he's going to spoil me. Let me carefully keep my eye on the road and push fast forward.
Well, I'm very sorry, but at least it's not like I spoiled Oblivion like Mary. I mean, she spoiled the entire ending and like didn't even give a spoiler alert a couple episodes ago.
I didn't like that movie, and I hope a lot of other people doesn't like it anyway. It's not worth it.
I like that movie. I thought
Tom
it was good.
Tom Cruise has done nothing good with his life since Rock of Ages.
Well, that was like 2 years ago.
I know.
Yeah, but Oblivion came out before that.
Whatever. That wasn't... That should not have been Tom Cruise.
From Glenn B. concerning what it said, 378 where on that house.
Across from Nora's house. Okay.
He says, I know Scott Foster, the AD that the Guilty Remnant had a interview with. He said, I know that he said there was nothing to look into, but I checked and I found this hymn, which does fit with what went down and is currently happening in the Leftovers universe. Oh, where are kings and empires now of old that went and came? Now, that is a hymn number 378. And he follows up with saying, we did sing a lot of hymns in the Lutheran church, but honestly, I had to Google this. Things come and go, but faith in God's church remains strong, and it's basically the meaning of that hymn. You would really have to reach to find this, though, but I thought he should send this to us. And you know, Glenn, normally I would say, hey, you're way off, because a guy from the show already said it didn't really have any meaning. But if hymn number 378 is saying, where are kings and empires of now, of old that went and came, talking about people that have come and gone and everything that has remained is the faith in God. Wow. That is a pretty cool connection. And I'm
this
not sure if I can
deep,
deny it.
Deep shit. Okay.
You swore.
I did, because Glenn B., you know, some of you people are just so smart and like do so much research. And I'm just like your casual show watcher who gets some things. I mean, I'm still like, I still don't really know what happened to everybody.
Hey, it's aliens.
Maybe aliens. I don't know. Christine wrote in telling us that she actually got really lost in this episode, and perhaps she was confused by the dream and awake sequences. I think that screwed some other people up too. Christine enjoyed the Kevin and Wade interlude and obviously thinks that Kevin's wish was granted. He got his family back. Mm-hmm. But she finds it really hard to believe that Nora would just be allowed to keep the baby. Nora's pain and letter to Kevin was so emotional and raw. Meg really annoyed Christine because she said, let's not forget she was talking just last week and now she's acting like the boss of the Guilty Remnant.
Yeah.
I'm not liking her character at all, Christine says. And the Christine storyline itself was weak along with other pregnant girls last time. She can see that it was eventually used to give to the baby to Nora. Now, did Holy Wayne know this was going to happen? What are your thoughts? And where has Tom gone, says Christine. Well, Christine, I think, so Tom's with Lori.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they're going. Maybe they're going home to finish Kevin's wish that his whole family comes home. Did Holy Wayne know this was going to happen?
See, I've had time to think and ruminate on this, but I want your answer first.
I think that Holy Wayne had sex with so many Asian girls. That
just banging Asian girls
that
left and right.
Maybe some people he hugged, he destined them to hang out with his babies.
Well, actually, you know, that
like that Santa Claus looking congressman.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he's gonna have a half black, half Asian baby on his doorstep or something.
Oh, like the guy that the congressman that he hugged in the pilot episode?
Yeah,
okay, yeah. All right. You see, now this is what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Remember how he said to all the little Asian girls that they were special?
Yes.
That they were everything?
Yeah.
And their child was going to be the bridge?
Yes.
Okay.
Are they all mini Waynes?
I'm thinking Wayne knew that eventually these girls are going to find each other. Because he had thought, he definitely had premonition abilities. Like you see in that, he prophesies his own death. But the way that the babies are the bridge isn't necessarily like, oh, they're going to have this great enlightening and they're the Jesus Christ reborn. No, 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 no. He was providing happiness for people through his hugs, right?
Yeah.
I think he knew that the babies...
make people happy.
Make people happy.
And that's why maybe the hugged people get a baby.
Well, not necessarily hugged people, but important people get babies. They are the bridge to the next life.
If these babies end up being like problem childs, though, I want the Gremlins theme song to play when they all get together as they walk down the street. You know that Gremlins song?
Yes, I do.
That's
know that Gremlins
song. Like all little babies like marching down the street like, we're from Wayne. We're going to ruin things.
Don't put water on us.
Yeah, or else we'll make more. Shakita wrote an email saying that she wants to touch on the Reverend Matt story. Is he losing his way? Because what reverend comes to the middle of nowhere and brings shovels to bury a dead body? I already saw Matt becoming a different person in two boats and a helicopter. But holy extreme. And how much of this was Kevin's dream? You know me, I'm usually very on top of things when it comes to Kevin and his dreams. But this shocked me. Also, was the episode flipping back and forth through time throughout the day because it was dark and then sunny and then dark again? On that same note, did Nora really sit there all night touching her kids' hands? You know what, Shakita? I think that sometimes, because I agree with you, I noticed that one of the things that bothered me is like when Kevin is saving Jill, it's night-night time. Like yeah. Not even dawn. You know, he was just coming back from burying Patty and mm-hmm. they were at the diner and they come back and it's dusk maybe.
No, it was night when they returned.
Yeah.
It was dusk during the drive home.
Okay, so then it's nighttime. So what, yes. Maybe like 10, 11, 12, we don't know.
Yeah, but...
no matter what, when he saved Jill, it was night time.
Yes.
And then when the fire trucks are there and he has Jill there and they're putting the oxygen mask, it's full out daytime. So yeah. Maybe it took the trucks a long time to get there.
If you noticed, if you go back to that scene, all the houses that were
they were smoking.
They were gone. They were obliterated. So you know how long it takes for that thing to fire up.
And in regards to Nora, I think Nora lost it and sat there all night. No, she didn't sit there all night because she changed outfits.
Yeah, and she probably took a poop.
She did her hair. She had a little makeup on.
She did put some makeup on.
Yeah, she looked very pretty sitting there with her family. So she probably, you know what I think Nora did? I think Nora like took them to each room throughout the day. Like, oh, come on, Johnny. Let's go eat your Cheerios.
Right. Wait. When did she turn into an English lady?
I don't know.
Let's go eat your
Cheerios. Nora's crazy voice.
Oh, is it
I'm
really?
I'm going crazy because of Wayne. I kind of sound like Wayne. I'm crazy. And I'm going to dance with my doll husband and then hit him in the ass because he cheated on me and then put him back down for breakfast. I don't know. Nora played with her dolls. Nora played with her dolls all night long.
Oh, my God. That was fantastic. From Missy, she says, even with the previous episode, I told you that it was good enough for me. This was like a bonus for me. They did perfectly. My only concern and thought of this ending was that it made me think twice. The elderly people burned their Down syndrome son, loved one doll, and Nora was leaving her family behind. It's like they were wished away. They don't want them back. They were moving on, but before that, they didn't want them. All the leftovers were angry at the GR for doing this because maybe they don't want them anyway. I go with that theory. But what is it? Will we ever know? My daughter tells me, Mom, it's aliens. They were abducted by aliens. Wow.
Hey, me and your daughter think alike.
Wow. No. Does that say something about you or does that say something about the daughter?
Maybe we're both brilliant.
And then she says, I laugh and say, it's okay, it's possible, but there's far too much religion for me to believe that. Missy.
There are some people who believe that God and Jesus are aliens.
That's true. There are some of those freaks out there. You ever see that guy in the History Channel with the weird hair?
Yes, and he wears the glasses. Yeah. Isn't one of those guys your professor?
No. That was Professor George. He is the one who has an expertise in the 300. No, in 300.
One of your professors was, I think, talking in the History Channel about aliens.
No. For those of you guys who don't know, I went to school at St. Anselm College in Manchester, New Hampshire. And some of my professors are actually kind of famous. So they've been on the History Channel a number of times. And whenever I watch the History Channel, I'm like, oh my God, there it is.
But none of them were about...
Not aliens. No, but the one guy that I'm talking about is the crazy guy with the crazy hair and the beard.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
Who like says all these pictures of like people... I don't know. Wasn't there some prophet about someone in a wheel?
I don't know.
Anyway, some people think that aliens, basically that people couldn't comprehend like people flying, angels or whatever. So they just ended up calling them aliens. So maybe they're one and the same.
Missy, I think you're partially right. Obviously this was my sudden theory of the week, a couple of weeks ago. But, how would you react, honestly? Like, let's say I departed, right? And I hadn't been around for 3 years. And then all of a sudden, here I am again. How would you, Mary, how would you react?
I would not pull a Nora. I would throw that away.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
that's a freaky, freaky doll.
And it's fake. It's not really there. It's not really the members of their family.
No.
That's just a weird, by the way, a low-end version of the loved ones.
Oh, well, listen, they bought like the Sam's Club package.
They had to buy so many.
Yeah, the value pack where it's value, but you lose a little bit of the quality.
Yeah, it's like the value pack razors. You get like 50 razors in a bag.
But there's only like two razors per blade, like two blades.
And they really blow, like they cut you as soon as you use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's what they got.
So
for the
I think that, they burn them because they're angry. And I think they burn them because they don't want to be around something or an object that resembles their family member, but they really aren't. Would you really want to be around that? I think it's just anger. People snapped like what we had talked about last episode.
Unless you're Nora and you play dress up with them.
And you take them around and you speak in an English language.
Yes.
Yeah. Not language, but.
Accent.
There you go. I got that.
Your favorite, the thing that you, like most people know you for, your accent.
I know.
Anyway, Santiago sent us a bajillion questions, and I'm going to go through them one by one and have a little discussion.
All right,
because
let's do it.
Each of them is really good.
Okay.
So first question, Santiago says, did Jill have an ulterior intention by joining the GR, or was she really just that messed up? Did she outsmart all of us by getting into the GR just to mess with her mom and bring her back? Or did she just go because she's like a moody little teenager?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I'm going more along the lines of she was smarter than all of us because she gave her mother that ultimatum. She said, talk. And she didn't move and she didn't do anything until Lori gave her a response. And the response was literally nothing. So Jill said, okay, screw it. I'm going to stay here until you are not allowed to forget me.
Speaking of Lori, what's up with her? Was this experience enough to turn her, or is she going to go back to the guilty remnant after seeing Tommy for a little while?
I think Lori is not going back to the GR. You could see it in her face as all the people and things were burning down, and as she walked away from Kevin, after Kevin had rescued Jill, she's just like, oh my God, what the hell did I do?
Exactly, though. That's my problem with Lori. What did I just do? You planned this. Like, you and Patty, and once Patty was dead, you were in charge of
this.
Yeah,
do you think they had an idea of the repercussions?
They love being martyrs. They had to know.
All right, so, let me say this. Is it more related to what happened, or is it more related to Jill?
Her reaction, Lori's?
Yeah.
Jill.
It's more related to Jill.
And I
think that's what threw her.
Yeah. I mean, she kind of lost it because she lost a baby.
Yeah. Okay. And I get that.
Now she sees her two babies that are still with her.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's going to be changed for good. I agree. She's not going to go back to the GR.
And the other piece of evidence is she sees Tommy and she goes and she grabs his hand.
Yep.
And it's an acknowledgement of family, something that you were not allowed to have in the GR. Now, if you go ahead and acknowledge that family, what does that say? Did she talk to him? I mean, I imagine that she talks to him. If she goes and acknowledges him like that, yeah, sure, I can see that. So I don't think she's going back to the GL.
I hope she talks in a normal voice instead of GL. Like if she was going to ask Tom, like, hi, it'd be like, hi, Tommy.
Well, think of all them butts that she's been smoking. And
maybe
the fact
that's why she spoke like that.
She sounded like the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah. That's going to be Lori's new voice. Santiago also wants to know if Kevin got away that easily.
Oh, see, now that's a good question. You know, Matt went up there and, you know, helped him bury him, bury Patty. And, you know, that also, this also kind of gets into Shakita's question, too. Like, what about Matt? Like, is he, like, what the hell happened there? Mm-hmm. Listen, I think Kevin called Matt and was like, yo, bro, I just seen some lady kill herself and I got blood all over me. And we got to fix this. So what I need you to do is... I need some water. I need a change of clothes. I need some shovels, and I need X, Y, and Z. I don't think Matt had any idea on what to bring.
Matt said I brought shovels.
Yeah.
Kevin was like, "Oh, okay." I think Matt brought the shovels on his own.
I don't think so. I think Kevin told him what to do. But okay, so let's just—is Kevin going to get away with it?
I think yes.
I think yes, but it would be much more interesting if he didn't. It'd be much more interesting because now he's put in a position. He's trying to move on with his life. He's been.
I don't think anyone's going to miss Patty because everyone's going to think she was burned.
Yeah, I know, but somehow, some way, it could be discovered. If there's blood all over the place, I mean, like, someone's going to find out what happened.
You know who I have a problem with?
What?
Dean.
Why?
Where was he in this episode?
Well, see, that's the key. Is Dean real?
Is Dean going to come and out him?
All right. That's a very good idea. And that's what makes it more interesting. Because if Kevin's trying to move on with his life, with Nora and the little Blasian baby and Jill.
Is that like even politically correct to say that? I feel like that's...
I don't know.
Blasian?
Yeah. Well, luckily we're not under the charge of the FCC.
Saying that.
Then I won't say it again. But
tweet Blake and let him know if that's right to
what
say?
I'm saying is, if he's trying to move on with his life and he's got this new little family of his, and then all of a sudden all this stuff comes to haunt him again, would it give room for Patty, like the apparition, to come and haunt him like she did in the finale?
Oh,
and what does that say?
I think Kevin got away with it in real life, but I think in Kevin's new dream world stuff that goes on, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not going to get away with that bit. All right, and finally, are we ever going to see the GR again? Santiago asks.
Yes, definitely, we're going to see them. Just because they had fulfilled their purpose with the Memorial Day doesn't mean that their faith has wavered.
Because Santiago says, you know, some of them broke character. Like you saw some of them weeping, like that one that was weeping at Matt.
Sure.
And then the other ones that didn't care. The honey badgers, like that guy that just sat in the house letting the fire consume him.
I love how we reference honey badger now in at least 4 or 5 straight episodes.
Oh my gosh, it's because so many people fit it.
No, I think they're coming back. And specifically, now this is a little bit of cast analysis. Liv Tyler is Meg. And Meg is turned into a little bit of an important character. Yeah, she, you know, she... If
she didn't die.
Yeah, and if Lori is coming back, isn't coming back to the GR, someone's got to head up the local Mapleton chapter of the GR. And everyone was already looking to Meg for authority. And you could see that vindictive freaking nature of Meg's, just like how Patty had. She is perfectly in tune to head up the new chapter of the GR. All right, Mark emailed us. He said he wanted to discuss Tom's scene when he sees Lori at the statue. I know a lot of people have suggested that Tom and Lori take off together or that Tom may join the GR. I think he leaves Mapleton after he leaves the baby on the Garvey doorstep. And to elaborate on the talented John Booker, who is a great friend of the show, by the way. John, if you're listening, hi. They keep listening. I love, love, love
we
all
love
of your
John.
Stuff. Tom's prodigal son story includes Lori as the father, not Kevin, because he is not his real father. So when he comes home expecting to find the comfort of his mother and finds that she has joined the GR and the town is in chaos, he no longer has a true home. He has now lost his real father to the departure. That's what he's positing. His mother to the GR and his faith to Holy Wayne. He is a nomad. He realizes he cannot stay in Mapleton, so he elects to leave the baby on the doorstep and leave town. To find what? Well, He doesn't know. And P.S. Did anyone notice the irony of Wayne's baby taking away Nora's pain and uncertainty as soon as she held her?
So I'm talking about. They're like Wayne.
Booby trap.
They're Wayne babies.
Yeah.
They're magical Wayne babies.
I wonder if they have the same ability as Wayne.
Yeah.
Or is it just that Wayne created it knowing that they'd all like be given off to somebody else?
No, they're like so Luke and Leia Skywalker. They've got the Force, okay. All right?
Yep.
So you are my father.
So you're saying Wayne's babies have the Force.
I am your father. I am Wayne. Wayne's babies, every single one of those babies has a Force.
Mark, I like your idea and obviously and indirectly John Booker's idea.
And Tammy, who also wrote in, wanted to know if Tom's birth father had departed. So this is a common theory.
Let me answer Mark first. I like your idea and indirectly John Booker's idea, but I don't necessarily agree with it because Tom didn't waste anything. He went to Wayne thinking that Wayne was going to give him purpose. Kevin was the one who wasted everything. He had everything he needed and he pissed it all away. And now he's coming back to find something that is provided for him. He's been given all the riches back. And if you remember in the last episode, we said prodigal means wasteful. And I don't see Tom as wasteful. Do you?
No, I don't.
So that's why I don't necessarily agree with John's theory here.
Anita wrote an email, and Anita is from Guatemala.
That a
girl. Thanks for writing in, Anita. She thinks that the departure, as painful as it was for Kevin, gave him his greater purpose. He was unable to keep his family together, but yesterday, meaning the finale, he may have slowly started gaining them back, especially with him walking home with Jill and that random dog, which is now civilized. Maybe that is his purpose. Gaining them is his purpose. Also battling those blackouts. I sometimes think that his nightmares might be premonitions to come or that have already happened in some way. Perhaps with that, he can avoid his father's ultimate ending of being committed as Junior was in his nightmare. He also gained the respect nobody had for him, which in my opinion, Mary speaking, that's freaking huge.
Yeah.
Mayor Lucy acknowledged that he was right about the guilty remnant. Eventually, the departure in a hard way gave him part of what he was missing before. Kevin will have what he didn't want when the departure happened, a dog and a new baby, assuming they both continue their relationship. Oh my God, I didn't even get that.
Yeah.
Wow. Even the baby girl balloon has a whole new meaning. When was there a baby girl balloon?
Because, wasn't there? Oh, remember on the deer? The deer had the baby girl balloon on his things.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I just got chills.
So you wonder if it's going to be a baby girl that he was supposed to have.
Well, now he does have one.
I know.
It's all there now, but I didn't expect for Tom to join Lori in whatever their next step is. I don't know if Lori will come back or if she's going to be with the Guilty Remnant or regroup. So great email. Thank you so much, Anita. And I didn't even catch the baby girl balloon once again.
And the dog thing too.
Oh
like,
my gosh, yes.
You're right, because he didn't want a dog with Lori, mm-hmm. didn't want the baby with Lori, and now he's got both with Nora.
Unless Lori comes home and they're sister wives.
Oh, by the way, that show is phenomenal. It's like wicked trash TV, but I love watching it.
Oh my God, we haven't watched it in a while.
Because like you got the one pretty one and the rest of them all kind of dogs.
Don't say that.
I'm sorry, it's the truth.
That is not,
hey,
no.
Like I said, Ken Lipson doesn't like the leftovers. I'm not good at thermodynamics, and this guy's got a couple of dog wives.
You are disgusting and insulting.
So I don't mean to insult anybody, not that much.
Well, I hope none of those sister wives listen.
Anita. Awesome. Awesome email. Great thoughts. Especially about the dog and the baby thing. I didn't even picture that as it was happening, but great catch. Charles emailed and said, Wayne represents an antichrist type character. Revelations describes the rise of the antichrist, who is a person with Christ-like powers that uses their ability to rise.
Oh my God.
Powers.
So that's really something in the Bible where like an anti-Jesus is going to come?
Yeah, in Revelation.
I didn't read that part.
You didn't read Revelation?
No, that was like the
you
scary
went to like
part.
Bible camp. How did you not read Revelation?
We sang Shine Jesus Shine.
Revelation's the only cool book in the Bible.
Because you were raised Catholic, right?
Yes, I was.
So you learned the fire and brimstone.
Yes, I did.
And I went to rock Jesus camps where it was like, let's sing and be happy because we're going to be forgiven.
Oh my God. And Charles.
So wait, no, I'm serious. For people who don't know this, because not everybody grew up learning about Revelation. So in the, like, is it the last chapter of the Bible?
Oh, I'm not sure when it is.
Is this like the grand finale?
The Revelations is the big end. It's like the end of times.
Okay. So someone is going to come and do what? Are they like Lex Luthor?
Well, yeah, you heard the story of the four horsemen, right?
No.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that like a card game? Like four guys go to a bar?
Oh, my God. All right. We're just going to move on.
No, I'm serious. What is an Antichrist?
Antichrist, well, okay. He's positing here that the Antichrist is a person with Christ-like powers that uses their abilities for something else. He's not necessarily wrong, but the Antichrist is also another term for someone who is other than Christ.
Oh, so everybody.
So no, not everybody, but someone who fashions himself as Christ, but he is a replacement of Christ.
So that's why when the Affleck guys came in and they were like, oh, he's someone who thinks he's God.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. And that could be considered the Antichrist. And I think Charles could be right here. He eventually follows this up and says, in our show, you guys discussed how Wayne loses life when using his powers.
It's kind of like Zelda, like that Zelda game when you see your hearts leaking out.
Well, in the book of Mark, Jesus Christ also loses power when he is touched by a sick woman that was immediately healed. However, Jesus can be rejuvenated and Wayne cannot, despite all the scenes with him laying down and resting after using his powers, which actually makes sense. Remember how he was like all screwed up in the brown underwear?
Yes, he needs to find the lakes that rejuvenate Link.
Wayne's powers are also weak and temporary, or a band-aid, as we had mentioned in the podcast, because he is not the Antichrist, but setting the stage for the Antichrist.
Oh my gosh, I can't.
His prediction is that Wayne's babies will play a pivotal role in the upcoming seasons.
Now, Charles said baby. Does he want just one baby or all of them? Because we don't even know how many babies there are. Let's assume
that he means babies.
Okay.
Although Wayne is not the Antichrist, it will be his offspring or springs. Wayne was able to predict this and decided to spread his seed around to multiple healthy and highly reproductive young Asian women.
Why Asian?
In fact, Christine and Tom remind me of Mary and Joseph. But instead of giving birth to Christ, again, it's the Antichrist.
Oh, I don't even get it, but I'm scared.
Just like Joseph was not the true father of Jesus Christ and adopted Jesus as his own, Tom appeared to be on a similar path, but now it's hard to tell how involved he will be in the life of Wayne and Christine's daughter.
Did this baby girl have a name?
I don't think so.
Aside from backwards car seat baby?
Screwed up car seat baby?
Oh my gosh. Mom doesn't change my diaper like normal moms do. Oh gosh. All right, Charles, you just freaked me out and I don't even read that part of the Bible. All I can picture are once again, the babies walking down the street to the Gremlins theme song. I hope it doesn't rain. More Antichrist babies.
Bright light. All right, let's get to our Twitter feedback.
Lauren Bradshaw said, there aren't many shows that make me feel and think anymore. She is thankful for The Leftovers, a great show that she looks forward to. Come on, season number two.
Natalie Cole says, cried my eyes out at the end of The Leftovers. Not really sure why. Still crying over Nora's reaction to seeing her family, I think. Natalie, you are 100% right, girl. That was probably one of the most powerful scenes I've seen on television pretty much ever, I'd say.
What part made you cry?
The letter that she wrote to Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
The letter that she wrote to Kevin, it just felt real to me. It felt like someone who was not sure of who they are and they need to go on. Paul Smith tweeted out, wow, beautiful, infuriating season finale. Lots of great, lots of terrible, but the GR slaughter was a thing of fucking joy. I don't know. I'm not sure what was terrible about it. What do you think could be terrible about
that? No, terrible, like, oh my God, that is so terrible that they did that.
Oh, okay. All right, I gotcha.
Brett Hedblum said, Justin Theroux will never be properly recognized for the work he did in the diner scene in The Leftovers finale. And that's a shame. You know what, Brett? Yes, he will.
Because we'll do it here.
We're going to do it, and we're going to give it real props. And I think that you and anyone else who feels the need should tweet with Justin's Twitter handle and HBO and hashtag The Leftovers and let them know that that diner scene was amazing.
It really was. Between the diner scene and the Job scene that he was reading the passage from Job when they were burying Patty, I really didn't expect that from Justin Theroux. I mean, the guy really nailed it. He was fantastic.
He's an amazing actor.
As he started to break down, as he started reading the passage, and then as he was talking about how that scene when he was describing what it was like after the departure, how the phones were down, and he didn't know what to do or how to help people. All he wanted to do was just get to his kids. It felt like how I would react. Mm-hmm. I can't describe it. I can't tell you. If you don't have a kid, then you don't understand. I'm not trying to make myself. But if it was a parent or if it was a sister that you needed to get to,
just someone you love.
It's that desperation, and Theroux. I mean, made it happen. I mean, oh my God, he was great. Shakita even tweeted in. She says, "Even bloody and beaten, Liv Tyler looks so pretty." Hashtag jealous.
Seriously,
they can't uglier. They can't uglier up.
If she's going to be the new Patty, she needs to be uglied up a bit.
Just a tad.
Gosh, Tony tells us that Tony feels like The Leftovers is about simply a tale about how people react to tragedy, how some heal, some wallow, and some quit. Tony, boom.
Nailed it. It's a real world. You know, it's a supernatural event and an event that we don't really have a whole lot of context mm-hmm. with. But the emotions are very real. They're very much the same as real life.
And after having interviewed Kath and Mimi, two very, very influential people on this show, mm-hmm. who both have very different viewpoints about what the show is really about.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It's how some people heal, some wallow, and some quit. Brilliant.
It really is. And you know, Kath was the person that
said it was about hope.
It was about hope, you know, and it could be. It very well could be at the end of this, at the end of the episode. You saw how Kevin got his wish, I think.
Maybe with sister wives.
And,
what?
And really, I mean, this is how people would react. It's that fight or flight method thing. Like either you fight it and you move and you keep going, or it's flight and you quit. Mm-hmm. And some people just up and quit. Or some people pretend, like Kevin. You just pretend like it doesn't happen. Doc Tatona tweets in, "Well, it seems that to be the show's modus operandi that answers can be given, but they're not guaranteed. Everything is fair game with this show."
What is modus operandi?
It's like the mission statement. It's like they're...
Doc, why'd you have to be so fancy?
He's great. I love Doc Tatona. He's the man. He loves Lost just as much as I do.
Modus operandi.
And you know what? The show isn't obligated to give you answers. It reminds me of that poem that Kevin's father used to read to him. "Just because you exist doesn't mean the universe has any obligation towards you."
Oh, God, that's such a Debbie Downer. Terrible poem. Amuth 717, "I've never been more afraid of any other fake groof in my life."
Say the real tweet. Come on now. Ken Stickler would be very happy if you said the real tweet.
"I'm a teacher now."
Come on. Mary got a new job as a teacher, by the way.
Yes. So,
come on, say it.
Nope.
No, come on. Fine.
Fine. Amu717 tweeted, "I've never been more afraid of any other fake group in my effing life."
Hashtag.
Mind effed.
That a girl. You know, it's funny because I was driving on one of the streets we have here in the city of Providence, and it's like this big walkway. It's whatever. And as I was driving, I seen two people literally all dressed in complete white, and my heart stopped for like a second and a half, thinking, "Oh my God, it's the guilty remnant." And then I realized, no, I'm an idiot. That didn't happen. It's kind of like that time when I was driving on 44 a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. and a deer was in the middle of the road, and I literally saw a deer get smacked, like crushed by a car.
Oh my gosh.
After the Garvey's at their best, you know, when the Esmeralda hits the deer and Justin goes ahead and bangs her.
Yeah.
I saw a deer get hit by a car, and the only thing I could think of was Kevin Garvey. And that's real life. I swear to God. I was like, "Oh my God, no, a deer, Kevin Garvey, what the hell happened?" Living Marble tweets, "Saw a woman walking down my street with two dogs wearing a white bathrobe and smoking a cigarette while I was watching The Leftovers." Neat.
No way. You know what? Okay, if the Guilty Remnant is back next year, mm-hmm. we should, as listeners, just mind F people in our neighborhood. And like, okay, so the show comes on late, right? It's like 10.
Yep.
Everyone should go for a walk in white outfits around 7, you know, like an after dinner walk.
And just like pick a house and just stand in front of it?
No, just walk around and don't look happy. Listen to our podcast. Just stifle your laughs. And just walk around with another friend who watches The Leftovers and see if anyone picks up on it. It's kind of like when I wear my Time Turner necklace. I have a Time Turner necklace from Harry Potter.
You're a wizard, Harry.
And every once in a while, someone would be like, is that a Time Turner? And I'm like, yes, it is. So who knows? I would totally suggest that we do it. Ty Avenger tweeted, I wonder where Christine went. Ah, well. Who wants to be the mother of a false prophet anyways?
I don't know. Where the heck did Christine go? Do you think she was on the bus?
Totally.
Really? You think so?
That guy wanted someone to get on the bus bad, man.
He was doing anything to get anybody on the bus.
Yep.
The Gray Mind tweets, let's all celebrate that Nora Durst survived the first season. Hashtag best character.
Yeah, I thought she was a goner.
I thought she was really going to die. When she was writing that letter, I thought the trouble box was coming out and the gun was going to be used.
Trouble. Louisville Dad, the Guilty Remnant did for Nora what Holy Wayne could not. Nora made her peace with the departure. And look what happened next.
You know, and that's the odd thing about this. Everyone was really jerked off that they dropped all these loved ones off at their houses and in the places that they were having an issue with, right? But look what happened to Nora. She finally came to peace with what happened. He's right.
Let me ask this next question.
All the crap that happened to the Guilty Remnant, right? Like all the people burning their houses down and then getting beaten up at the end. Did they deserve it?
Yes.
Yes. Why?
They asked for it. Pretty much.
Did they deserve it? Like that is
did
that,
they deserve to die?
Is that punishment worth their crime?
It's hard to say because I do not believe in violence. I'm a lover, not a hater.
You're a Quaker.
I am. When I did that quiz online, it told me what religion I am. I'd be a Quaker. I bet I'd have to read Revelation though. So maybe I don't want to be a Quaker. I'll stick to rock Jesus. Anyway, I don't think that Nora made peace with the departure because of the living, the loved ones.
Really?
No.
Why?
I think Nora was going to kill herself. She was going to kill the substitute teacher and then she was going to kill herself. I don't think she made peace. I think it pushed her over the edge. I think it brought crazy Nora tenfold and it wasn't until she touched that baby. Things changed.
All right, I can see where you're getting at there. I mean, I'm not sure if I agree, but I see what you're getting at.
And once again, she's touching the baby. Mm-hmm. She's having the touch just like she touched
Wayne. Can you at least admit this? What the GR did for her was a lot more than what Wayne did. The GR made her realize that she can't pretend. She can't just use Wayne as an example. Like, to use Wayne as an example, she can't just get your... You can't get a magic fucking hug and everything goes away. It doesn't work. Like
I don't.
That.
I don't know. It's what your opinion of what is more. Nora was happy. She said that she even thinks she was able to love Kevin.
Yeah, but she realized that it was walking amongst the dead ruins or the ruins of a dead civilization. That she. It's kind of like whistling past the graveyard. You know, like you're pretending that it's not real. It's not there.
But can't the same be said of anyone? Look at you. Like you lost your mom.
Mm-hmm.
And how often were you crying?
I never cried. Not once. When my mom died. And not because I love my mother more than anything. It was just that at the time, I couldn't even process it.
So
I was 18 when my mother died, by the way.
You've gone on living your life.
Yes.
And you've found things to be happy about.
Yeah, but I had something... There was something different about...
You didn't have a hug from Holy Wayne. Yeah.
No, there's something different about my life and everybody's life right now in the real life in comparison to the Leftovers universe. The difference is that when my mom died, there was a body and I got a chance to say goodbye.
No, but not everyone has that. Think about people who died on like that plane crash
or the
Malaysian Airlines.
But you know that they were on the plane and the plane's gone. Right?
They don't know. Did they ever find that plane?
I don't fucking know.
I don't think they did.
But what I'm saying is they were on a plane and the plane disappeared. It's not like for no reason, all of a sudden, a bunch of people disappeared for no apparent reason. And that's the difference. You can point to something. I can point to what killed my mom. It was a brain aneurysm. That's what happened. I can point to that. And I could say, yes, my mother was taken from me very quickly, very suddenly, and I wasn't even in the same state. But I know that's what happened.
You know, because a doctor told you.
But I also had a body to say goodbye to. Mm-hmm. Now, these people, the people that suffered from the departure, there is no body. There's no reason. It's not like, oh, hey, you know, this person disappeared because they were suffering from lung cancer because they were smoking so much, or they disappeared because they had a heart failure. Nothing is like that.
Yeah, but so many people don't get bodies.
But they can point to something. They can point to...
But they still won't understand it. Like the people who died... Yesterday was 9/11. The people who died in 9/11, mm-hmm. very few of them had like bodies to be buried.
Sure, but they
and
can...
And you can point and you can say, okay...
You can point to it because it was terrorism.
Yeah, you can point to terrorism.
But there's a reason. There's a reason why...
But you can't...
They died. But there is no reason why these people disappeared.
There is. But there is. We don't know it yet, but there is a reason.
Okay, so let me say this. In the universe, as we're watching the show, the people right now don't know the reason. And nobody knows the reason. It's not like it's being held by the government and they know it.
No, it's
they
just
don't know it.
People don't
and,
know it yet.
And as a result, we don't know it. And you can't assume... And this is the problem that I have with people who like... love the show. I mean, that don't like the show because they didn't say, oh, well, the departure happened because of X, Y, and Z. The show never gave any inclination that it knows exactly why the people departed. And that's the problem.
But that's the problem departed. Like, with a plane, the Malaysian Airlines that they still haven't found. And they're just like, sorry, it fell somewhere.
Yeah, but
those people are never going to have closure. Mm-hmm. They don't know what happened to them. They're never going to get the bodies.
I think that might be an apt comparison.
Or had your mom, I mean, yes, you would have had her body. Had your mom passed away before they could have figured out what it was?
Yeah, but I still would have a body.
Yeah, like, you'd at least have a body. So let's stick with the Malaysian Airlines. But I'm just trying to get to the fact that like a lot of people live with grief for like forever and it consumes them. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they can't move on. Mm-hmm. A lot of people live with a constant reminder, with a living reminder maybe. And then there's other people who find a balance and know that something happened, know that their family member or their loved one is no longer there, but that doesn't stop them from living their lives.
That's true. And then again, this is why the Leftovers is a great show and sparks great conversation, because it's dealing with real issues, real emotional issues, whether people can fight or flight or they can quit or they can move on. Some people react differently to others. I'm saying my thesis is that it's hard for us to have any context because there isn't a lot to compare this to. And it's not easy to deal with because there is nothing you can point to. There's nothing you can sit there and say, okay, my parents got in a car accident. That's why they croaked. You just can't do it. So with that said, learning how to deal with that and learning if Nora... Did she get healed by Wayne? I don't know. But I think that the GR finally gave her an opportunity to look at it and confront it. And that may or may not be a good thing. I don't know yet.
You don't know what she was going to do. Shakita.
Again, I love Shakita.
Shakita's Twitter handle, by the way, is Sirena, like yeah. Siren with an A, 6783. She says, I think it's because a lot of people I know were expecting an explanation of the departure, and maybe people were disappointed. And I agree. I think people who haven't come to the understanding that this isn't a show that's supposed to give you an answer in that respect, they might have thought the season finale would have been an explanation of where everyone went. And so if you were one of those kind of people, we're sorry. We're sorry for you because it did not end that way.
Jonathan Evilboy Walk says, a friend loans you his shovel. A good friend helps you bury the body. # this is misery porn. # but I love it.
Nicole Joel 12 tweets, it's a mystery and I don't crave the answer. I just enjoy watching the eloquent portrait of compelling heartbroken characters.
Well put. At Jen Antonic tweets out, no one I know likes The Leftovers, but I love it. Maybe I need new friends.
You can be our friend, Jen.
Jen, always be our friend. We're here for you. We had no problem talking about the leftovers with you.
My mold one tweeted that he, she, I don't know. Their name on Twitter is I Love Ham Steak. So I don't know if it's a he or she. But they had the acoustic orchestra version of Metallica's Nothing Else Matters on the show tonight. And Lars made 20 cents tonight.
Yeah. Dead Lars Ulrich. You remember the big controversy with Napster?
Yeah.
That was preempted by Metallica and their drummer, way. Lars Ulrich. So
he was the one that was so mad against Napster?
He was the one who filed the lawsuit against them.
Oh, my God.
And he's the one who eventually got them shut down.
Wow.
So and it's always been a running joke that Lars Ulrich wants to ruin the music industry.
I thought he just wants money.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why he made 20 cents.
Way to go. Way to go, Lars.
Craig Version 2 tweets out, seriously, that kitchen scene was the creepiest thing I've ever seen, including the birthing video in nursing school.
Ew.
I seen that video. And,
you have?
I think so. Haven't I?
No, you didn't go to nursing school.
Well, no, but you know the birthing video that they're talking about, like the video.
No, you didn't watch the video that he would have had to have watched.
Well, whatever. I've seen some video with birthing.
You saw Hypno Baby's birth of people singing and birthing. And you've seen Ricky Lake give birth in The Business of Being Born.
Oh my God, that was awful. Don't ever watch The Business of Being Born.
Nick.
Because you're going to see Ricky Lake's nipples and nobody wants to see Ricky Lake's nipples.
Well, just to let you know, they're a lot bigger than you would have thought.
Oh my God, it's like pancakes.
Yeah.
It was like gross.
Anyway.
It was like dark brown pancakes.
Okay, I'm really going to get nauseous.
Right, let's get to the voicemails.
Hey, Mary and Blake. This is Pablo from Argentina. First of all, I got to say I love your podcast. I really enjoy listening to you guys. You make me laugh so hard. So keep up the great job. And I want to talk about this woman who stopped the car when Kevin was smoking and asked him if he was ready. Like they know something's gonna happen. They kind of remind me of that creepy naked guy who knew about Christine's baby and the dream. Maybe there are some people who knows what's coming next. They dream about it as Kevin, and now I think Patty was one of them too. So what do you think? Okay, looking forward to hear your next podcast. Hope you understand my weird accent. Bye.
Wow, Bangkok, Argentina, Guatemala. We have people listening to us from all over the world. This is great stuff. Anyway, those three, the three ladies that Kevin ran into saying, what's next? Jeez, I don't know. I'm not sure. I can honestly say I don't know what those people are about. My first inclination is to think that they are from the GR. Maybe they're the first remnants of the GR, or they're the first people who helped create it. I don't know. I wish I was smart enough to figure that one out. But that's my first inclination, is to say that they are the ones who either created or helped begin the GR. Pablo, thank you for listening all the way from Argentina, and the very kind words about our show, by the way. It's been a pleasure to be able to talk about this with you.
Hey, it's Shakita, aka Serena6783. Okay, so first off, the episode was amazing. The scene with Tommy and Christine, I felt like that was probably mirroring something that happened between Kevin and Lori years ago when Kevin decided to take responsibility for Tommy after whatever happened between Lori and Tommy's bio dad, the douchebag from Good Will Hunting. I felt like Tommy was really being a man and trying to step up, and then Christine abandoned him with the baby, which was crazy. I actually did not see that coming. I really thought she would probably stay with Tommy and try to have a family. Secondly, I want to comment on Nora. Her scene was heart-wrenching. I almost cried. It was horrible to see her in that moment where she wakes up and her family was there. The last thing that happened between them was not very pleasant, so that must have killed her inside. I don't really have any actual deep thoughts on it. I just took it for what it was. This episode was actually really, really great, and I was so proud of it. I can't wait till season two. Thanks very much, and talk to you guys maybe next season. Okay, bye.
Don't ever feel like you have to have deep thoughts about this show. You don't always have to. Sometimes it's good to just take things as they are. We will learn that lesson from Mary today. No, the good thing is that hopefully we're going to be back season two, obviously. We are, and as is the show, which is a good thing. But yes, Nora's scene was absolutely heartbreaking. It was terrifying. It was heartbreaking. It was just god awful. But it, you know, apparently, like we said, maybe some good things might have come out of it. I cried. So there's just no way around that. I cried, and it was tough on me. But thank you for calling in, and hopefully we will get a chance to speak to you next season.
Hey, Mary and Blake, this is Scott. Wow. I just rewatched the last part of The Leftovers when Nora writes her letter. And to answer your question online, did Kevin get his wish? Well, I think his wish was, I want my family back. And so I'm thinking to myself, one down, maybe three to go. You know, Jill, of course. But I think he was also thinking of his former wife. They're divorced, of course. And Tommy. And we know that Tommy's back, but Kevin doesn't know it. So it's going to be interesting. I don't think that he considered the fact that Nora and the baby that Tommy apparently dropped on the doorstep would ever be a part of his life. And when you see the look in Jill's eyes as if to say, oh, man, you know, I just wanted to be back with my dad and reconnect with my family and rebuild my family. Now you got to wonder what she's thinking when she sees Nora looking at Kevin with those bedroom eyes and that baby in her arms and basically almost suggesting, hey, now we can start over. It's really ironic, given the letter that Nora wrote, that she sees the baby, her maternal instincts kick in, and now we have an interesting plot line for season two. There's just so much that I could talk about, and I can't wait to hear your podcast. All I can say is, it sure seems to me that the meaning of The Prodigal Son Returns has a double meaning. I think it's certainly Tommy on the surface because, you know, he's come back. And I think it's also Kevin. I'm starting to think that maybe Kevin is fine now, or at least better enough to carry on with his life. I think the near-death experience and seeing, you know, Jill nearly die in the flames, and seeing that his ex-wife survived, I think maybe it has dawned on him that his purpose is where he is, and he just needs to make the best of it. So I think The Prodigal Son returning is in many ways Kevin, kind of back to being in the present and deciding he's going to go with it. We'll see how that happens next season, but in the meantime, can't wait to hear what you say on this podcast and others as well. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Scott, thanks for calling in. I am very much in agreement with you about Kevin being the prodigal son. I don't see Tommy as the prodigal son, as we already talked about earlier in this podcast, so I'm not going to go ahead and keep going over it. But one of the things I do want to talk about with you is what you said about Jill. You see, I'm not so sure that she was unhappy that Nora showed up. I think that she was actually happy that she was. In fact, from what I recall, at that end of that scene, there was like, she had like this little smile almost, like an acknowledgement of, okay, we can move on. Like, all right, I think I can do this. I think that's what happened with Jill. And in regards to Lori, you know, I'm not sure that Kevin wished for Lori to come back. I think that's that look that he gave her after he rescued Jill, that look of like almost disdain. It's what it felt like to me. I think he recognizes that things are pretty much over with Lori. I think he knows that she's kind of a lost cause for him. Not that she's a lost cause in general, but just for him, that it's just not going to work. There's too much that's happened. So I'm not sure if he wished for her back. I think he just wished for something new, something that he didn't have yet. And I think he got it.
Hey, Living Reminders, it's Diane from Leftover Daily. And I want to talk about a couple of things. One, Tom's decision to leave Christine's baby at his father's doorstep. I think that shows a lot how Tom still trusts Kevin and still appreciates him, although he's not his biological father. I think it really shows that Tom did appreciate Kevin taking him in as his own son. So that was really cool. And I also want to talk about Kevin's wish that he made with Wayne. I personally think it's to have his family all together again. And I think at the end we kind of see that because he's with Jill and Tom's with Lori. So although they're not all together, I think they're finally going in the right direction for that. Maybe he wished for something else. Who knows? But that's what I think. But I really, really, really like how Tom decided to leave the baby at Kevin's doorstep.
Diane, thanks for calling in. We always love hearing from you over at Leftovers Daily. Yeah, Tommy leaving the baby with Kevin was something that was really poignant and important. I think he definitely knew that Kevin would take care of the baby simply because Kevin took care of him and he was an abandoned child. And it does say a lot about what Tommy thinks of Kevin and has a high regard for him. So I do wonder if he will try and get in touch with him. But geez, you know, I'm not sure. Just simply for the fact that he did leave that baby out and he abandoned it and left it for Kevin, it doesn't seem like he has any intent of talking to him. I know I just totally contradicted myself, but that's the way that it seems to me. But the regard that Tommy has for Kevin is quite beautiful. And after all these years, he still has it, which is great.
Hey, Living Reminders. Want to say love the show. Listen to you guys every week after I watch it. Always makes me feel better. What is it? Just wanted to reiterate. I loved the finale. Totally loved it. Had to take a step back from it because at first when I was done watching it, it was like, not sure. Thinking about it, totally do love it though because it wasn't like overly happy, wasn't overly sad. It kind of touched on everything you wanted it to. It can go somewhere, close enough doors that if it did end, would have been happy. I mean, and, you know, Justin Theroux, shirtless, always makes me happy. But hope you guys, have a great episode and hope you guys liked it too. Bye.
Thanks for calling in. I wish I knew your name. I'm sorry. I wish I could give you credit for what you said and where you're from. So next time, maybe when you call in, just let us know what your name is and where you're from. But yeah, no, Justin Theroux, I got to say, that man's so good looking. It kind of even makes me happy. I just kind of sit there and be like, oh man, why the heck don't I have a body like that? Maybe it's because the chocolate cake I eat pretty much every single day. No, maybe. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, no, the finale was awesome, and I loved it, and I loved every second of it. It was sad. It was happy. It was full of hope. You're right. It did touch upon kind of everything. It was neither one way or the other. I think by the end, it evened itself out. So what a great finale.
Mary and Blake, it's Brian, a.k.a. BDF331 on Twitter. I just wanted to give you my thoughts on the phenomenal finale of The Leftovers, which capped off a masterful season one. I really cannot remember a season one of any show that I loved as much as this season. I'm happiest most of all for Damon Lindelof. He successfully changed the conversation away from Lost and got that monkey off his back. As self-deprecating as he is, it's easy to tell how hurt he was by the Lost finale criticism. So The Leftovers proves that he's one of our finest storytellers and not just some one-hit wonder like some will claim. Among all the great television in 2014, such as True Detective, Fargo, The Americans, Game of Thrones, The Leftovers was by far my favorite experience of the group. Like I said, it was a collective masterpiece, as each episode made me think and feel in ways that are unique to the medium. It felt like I experienced life in the post-departure world along with these characters, which is a credit to both the acting, the writing, the directing, as well as, you know, everything the crew did, from the cinematography to the location scouting. Of course, there's Max Richter's score that added to everything. It was just truly an unbelievable and unique experience. There was just breakout performances, like I said, from Justin Theroux to Carrie Coon. You know, established actors like Anne Dowd and Amy Brenneman put up some great work, Liv Tyler. And then we had some great new writers like Kath Lingenfelter, who, you know, have established themselves as forces to be reckoned with alongside the actors like Theroux. So I'm super excited for season two. You know, Kevin gets the family that he wished for with Wayne, even though it wasn't quite the family he necessarily had in mind. But this family's probably better for him. I don't think things could just go back to normal with Lori. Yeah, too much damage has been done. But she at least gets a chance to reunite with her son and figure out the direction that she wants to go into. I think Jill has a bit more closure with her mother. And I don't think she's going to live that kind of self-destructive path that she was on in season one anymore. Justin Theroux, his Emmy submission episode, as far as I'm concerned, was the finale. Scene after scene, the man has kept delivering acting lesson after acting lesson. I hope from season two that we get to dive into other cults. I think we will, as well as the other Holy Wayne-like figures. As that agent said, you know, assholes who think they're God. And most of all, I hope we learn about Russia. That was quite a obscure reference that they made, so... You know, typically in season finales, they'll make references to things that they're going to cover in the next season. So I think that's one that they knew would get some attention from the fans. So, Mary and Blake, thanks for an unbelievable season of podcasts. I'm not sure what your upcoming schedule is, but if this is the last chance I'll get to say thank you, you know, again, thank you on behalf of everybody. You guys have set the bar as far as Leftovers podcasts, as far, you know, from my perspective. So, thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Brian, thanks for calling. As always, with every single week, you bring it, my man. I love hearing your voicemails, and I'm sure the listeners hearing them too, because you get down deep into that material and you analyze it. And there are a couple of things I want to talk to you about. Actually, three things. First, this gives me opportunity to thank you guys and thank the listeners for engaging with us all season. And, you know, Mary and I are happy to do this podcast. It's an honor, really. Second, you brought up Russia, a very cool inclusion, and you're right, that's something I wonder that they, once they figured out that season two was happening, I wonder if they wrote that in. Maybe they knew that season two was going to happen long before they announced it to us, the viewers. And they had a plan like that. Part of me thinks that that's what they did. They held off and they let us stew in our own juices for a little while. And the last thing that I want to talk to you about is what you said about Damon Lindelof not being a one-hit wonder and being a great storyteller of our generation. You know what? You're right. He is. And he is a great storyteller. He's not a one-hit wonder. And he, you're right also. He got that monkey off of his back concerning Lost. He can now move on and get better with his craft and create better stories. Not to say that Lost wasn't a great story. It was. But you're right that I think he learned a lot from Lost, and he was hurt very much by all the criticism. So, hey, did he do a better job because of Lost? I think so, and I think we're all better off for it. Again, thanks for calling, Brian.
Hey, Mary and Blake. This is Mike Cassidy calling. This is the first time I've called in. I've talked to you guys a couple of times on Twitter. Just wanted to call in and leave some feedback and say thanks for the podcast. I really enjoyed listening to you guys all season, and I appreciate you guys doing it. You guys started the podcast talking about the Lost finale. I actually stopped the podcast to call you, so I haven't listened any further yet. I just wanted to echo what Blake was saying. Best episode of TV maybe that I've ever seen, and I know you're with me on this, that it gets kind of annoying to see all the people that think, you know, that misread the finale or misunderstood what it was trying to do, and thinking that all the characters were dead the whole time. you know, it's a real disappointment. And I feel bad for Damon, to be honest with you, because when you put your life work into something and do such a phenomenal job and then have people not understand what you were trying to say, that has to be frustrating to a point. But anyway, on to the episode. Real quick, another one of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen, and kudos to Damon again and everybody involved. I think the acting on this show is incredible. Namely, Justin Theroux was a really bright star in this episode. I think he should really get some Emmy consideration or some awards consideration for his work, especially all season, but mostly in this episode. Every scene he was in was dynamic and really sucked you into, I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. So it was great. And there's a lot of things I'd like to say, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. So I'll probably hit you on Twitter or Facebook or something like that. But thanks again, guys. Really enjoyed the podcast and listening to you guys, and my best to you. Take care.
Mike, thanks for calling in. And for next season, don't wait till the finale to call in. We want to hear from you more. I know we've been talking to you over Twitter, and I'm so happy that you decided to call in, especially about the Lost finale. I can always, 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 always talk Lost. I'm glad that you liked the Leftovers finale, and you can always talk about anything you want. Don't worry about taking up our time. We're all here to talk about it and have fun anyway. So thank you for calling in. And yeah, Justin Theroux, he at least deserves a consideration for an Emmy. I don't think he'll get it, but he at least has brought himself into the conversation. So he set up a foundation, I think, maybe for next year if he continues this kind of great work. But this is definitely, though, this is his shot across the bow, most certainly.
Hi there. This is MK from Chicago. Thanks for your great podcast. I really agree that listening to your show helps me deepen the experience of appreciating this interesting, wonderful show. And also you're funny and just really pleasant to listen to, so I appreciate that a great deal. I just had a question about the finale, which was something that I was struggling with in terms of suspension of disbelief, and that had to do with the timing of everything. It seems so kind of crazy that Wayne would be in the bathroom when Kevin walked in. That felt a little, I lost a little suspension of disbelief. Not that obviously the entire show is suspension of disbelief, so I realize that. So I'm ready to let that go or whatever, and that was interesting. But more so, it seems like as everything in town was kicking off and Kevin wasn't there, but there would have been a lot of messages trying to reach him, like texts and phone calls. And, I mean, I believe, unless I'm forgetting a detail about his phone dying, I thought his phone was still in operation. And so it just seems like they would have really been trying to reach the chief of police while the town was kicking off. And then it seems so strange that they just walked into pure chaos. Or even, like, a caregiver trying to reach the pastor, right? So that was a bit odd. So then also the second piece of the timing being strange is that he gets back in town just in time to take his wife away from someone beating her up or about to beat her up and rescue his daughter from a building that's burning so quickly. And again, I'm willing to let it go. I'm willing to, but it just seemed, I don't know, that all just seemed a little tough. But other than that, thanks again for a great podcast, and thanks for the interviews. They were really, really great, too. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Hey, MK, thanks for calling. Yeah, there are some coincidental things happening. As for Wayne being in the restaurant with Kevin, I'd like to think that there's something larger at play than just coincidence. They were inexorably connected, even without them knowing it. And I think that is something that the writer is probably trying to say about Kevin and the phone. Yeah, if you remember, he told Matt that his phone was dead. Matt was trying to contact him, trying to get on the road from the highway. And he's like, oh, yeah, my phone was dead. And then in terms of them showing up when all of a sudden it was just right in time to save Lori and Jill, well, yeah, that's just... writing. I think you're right. That is something that is just, hey, it happens. That's right then and there, and he shows up right at the right time, miraculously. That's TV for you. Also, in terms of Matt not getting phone calls from one of his parishioners or the caregiver, yeah, you're right. I feel like that he probably would have gotten a phone call. I'm not sure exactly why. Sorry, that's my son in the background. I'm not exactly sure why she didn't call. Maybe she didn't know. Maybe she was too busy with the wife and she didn't see it or she didn't hear it. Who knows? Maybe he lives on the other side of town and she didn't hear about it. But yeah, you're right. In this day and age, how do you not hear about it? So I think that's probably one of those things you just kind of have to let go.
Hello, Mary and Blake. Love your podcast. Love talking about The Leftovers. And I have a lot of theories about what's going on, but the big thing is this. I believe next season's going to revolve around hope. And if you think about it, I think this season did too. Everyone was focusing on what was lost, but the key, I believe, is what was found. Over and over again, things lost were found. Kevin's shirts, baby Jesus, burnt bagels, the gun, National Geographic, even lost dogs, dead ones and living ones. Even Kevin Sr. and Jr. were away from the action and returned just in time to save Jill's life. I believe that in Memorial Park stands that statue that Lori was looking up at. And the thing is, everyone assumed that was a baby floating into the sky. I think next season, the departed are going to return, and the first is going to be Lori's baby. The statue isn't of a baby floating away, but one returning to a mother's arms. The season's going to begin with Lori having a sonogram.
Again, I wish I knew your name. I think I know who this is, and maybe you didn't put your name up there for a reason, so I'm not going to say it, but if you do call next time, please let me know your name so I can give you the proper credit, like I said earlier. But I saved this voicemail for last because I loved what this gentleman had to say about things being found and hope, and ultimately, I really believe that's what The Leftovers was about. Kevin did find a family. He did find that dog. And the idea of having the departed come back and starting the next season on Lori Sonogram, that would be a bold, bold move. And I would love for them to do it. Although it kind of reminds me of that show. What's the name of that show that's on NBC? It's like the one, The Returned or something like that. Or it's about all the people that came back after they disappeared after a number of years or whatever. I mean, I'm afraid that it would run into that territory and it would take away from what they accomplished this season. But it would be a bold move, and I think it would be an interesting narrative to go over. So, but yeah, I love everything you've discovered about hope and things being found again and being brought back. An excellent, excellent, excellent interpretation of what's happening here in The Leftovers.
Thank you so much for everyone calling in. Continue to call in. Let us know more of your thoughts and theories, because if you're like us, you're going to be driving around one day being like, wait a second, I have this brilliant idea. Speaking of brilliant ideas, here is this week's Tweet of the Week. It comes from Chad Edmondson. His Twitter handle is Chad. Ow. Episode 1 of The Leftovers, and I'm like, this makes no sense. Last episode, and I'm like, this makes no sense. I can't wait for season 2.
That a boy.
And it'll probably be the same feeling, Chad.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. And I think a lot of people felt that way. But that's why you got us. You got the Living Reminders to help you out.
Hopefully we can make some sense. Or you can be with me and just not get it anyway. And it's really okay.
And just accept it as it is.
Because that's how you roll with The Leftovers.
Craig, congrats on being this week's Tweet of the Week. And actually the last Tweet of the Week.
No.
For a while.
We'll have like tweets of the episode because we may not have every single week during the interim. But we'll still have some tweets per episode.
But congratulations. All right. What do you say, kid? You want to close out the show?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it.
Thank you, everyone, so incredibly much for listening to this episode of The Living Reminders. If you want to stay in touch with us and give us some more feedback and let us know your thoughts, head on over to thelivingreminders.com. There you can find out more information about Blake and myself. There'll be links to our other podcasts as well as our voicemail button. So you can leave a voicemail through our website.
You can always talk to us too. I mean, just because we're not going to be podcasting necessarily every week after this doesn't mean that we don't want to talk to you guys. Any email that you send, we're going to respond. Any tweet that you send, we're going to respond. I can't wait for you to do that. So you can also get us on Facebook at facebook.com/livingreminders.
Find us on Instagram or Twitter. That handle is the same, Living Reminders.
And the email machine will always work and I will always respond. So get us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
And last, but certainly not least, head on over to iTunes. If you've listened to us this season and you've enjoyed it, I would really, 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 really be so appreciative if you headed over to iTunes and left us a rating and review. And here's why I'm begging. Because there are 40 reviews right now. 40 awesome reviews.
You guys have been so great to us.
I am so flattered. But then when I see how many people subscribe to The Living Reminders, and I'm like, what do all these hundreds and thousands of people think? Like, do they like it? What do they want changed? What do they want more of and next time?
Yeah,
next
we just want to get better for you guys.
We want to know what you love and what you think can be improved upon. So please head on over to iTunes, rate and review us, and make sure that other fans of The Leftover Show can easily find us. This is how it works, by ratings and reviews. So go out and do it.
Thanks, guys. I loved being a part of it with you this season. And we'll be back. I think we'll...
stay subscribed because we're not going to be doing it every single week, but we're hoping to get some more really cool interviews for
you.
Yeah,
we have some interviews lined up, and I can't really tell you what they are now, but they're really freaking cool. So
keep your eyes on Instagram, Twitter, yeah. Facebook, everything, but stay, most importantly, subscribed.
Hey, and most importantly, actually, as you're listening to this, The Leftovers Megacast is going to be coming up as well.
Oh my God, yes.
So if you have any further questions, anything that you want to know about Mary or myself or Tiffany and Dylan from the Guilty Remnant podcast, we'll answer it. If you have a favorite, if we have a favorite color, we'll answer it. If we have a favorite food, we'll answer it. If we like dogs instead of cats, we'll answer it. But if you have stuff about the show that you want to know too, we'll answer that too. We'll be there for you to help guide you through the rest of the season. Just make sure that if you're writing an email or you're leaving a voicemail, or especially if you're doing Twitter, you give it the Leftovers Megacast hashtag. So again, if you're on Twitter and you have a comment or a question, it's not going to get seen unless it's with the hashtag Leftovers Megacast. So any other voicemails, emails, Facebook stuff, just put that little delineation that it's for the Leftovers Megacast, and then we'll be able to put it on the show. So I can't wait for that. That's going to be happening. I think it's getting published on the 16th, which is a Tuesday. Am I right?
Sure.
So
once again, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. It's going to be next Tuesday. So I think it's the 16th. So be on the lookout for that. I can't wait to deal with Dylan and Tiffany. It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. So thanks, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure to break down this show with you. Honestly, it's been an honor. And
we're still here.
We're still here.
And so are you. So make sure you're subscribed, and we'll talk to you all soon. I'm Mary.
My name is Blake.
And this has been The Living Reminders.